In a world crying out for a top 10 show. John Rocha and Matt Nost are here to bring you the top 10. Take it away, boys. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Top 10 Show. I am John Rocha.
I am Matt Nost.
Today, we are discussing something called Treasure Hunt Movies.
Yep.
Counting them down in honor of, what's the movie we're doing it?
It's for Dora the Explorer.
Dora the Explorer, that Italian, Latino classic.
Dora the Explorer. Exactly. The Italian translated into the American.
That's right.
It's like when they did, Spike Lee did Old Boy. It's our version.
Oh, right. Yes. Very well done.
Hopefully it's as good as the original.
Have you read the Todd McCarthy review on this film?
No.
It made the rounds this week because he made a lot of references to the fact that Dora was more sexual than, like, she looked, because she's 18. Isabella Moner, who's playing her, is like 18. And he was saying that, like, she was the outfit was a bit too tight and that it was a little weird to see this guy. So it was a whole thing. And people were like, what the fuck? Like, people were reading this review going, what is happening here?
Really?
Yeah, it was a really uncomfortable.
By other people that have seen it already?
Yes. And other people that were like, what the hell is he talking about? Like, why would you even have this many references to the sexuality of this character, or that she looks like that she, the clothes is tight or whatever, and it makes it look like she's not young. I was like, what the hell is happening here?
I
don't know.
I haven't read the review. It's kind of hard to have an opinion on something I knew nothing of.
That's fair.
It's a scandalous review.
A bit scandalous, yes.
It spread like a wildfire through the critic community.
The quote-unquote film Twitter, which I absolutely hate that fucking term. Film Twitter.
By the film Twitter Illuminati?
Yeah, I just don't like that term, film Twitter. People use it now, hashtag film Twitter, to like put all critics and all pundits into one boat. And it's like, oh, film Twitter's going crazy about this. Film Twitter's going to be upset. And I'm like, fuck off, man. Any generalization of points of view drives me nuts. It makes my independent streak like fucking rage go into the red zone.
True, but at the same time, what can you do about it?
Yeah, nothing you can do about it.
There's nothing you can do about it. You're putting your opinion out into the world, and what they do with it is their choice.
That's true. It's very true.
So it sucks, but, you know, it's not how you intended it.
Yeah, true.
Tale as old as time as far as the media is concerned, though, so.
Yeah, that's true. Manipulate whatever you say to put it in
the box or
whatever.
Whoever is being quoted, whatnot, and be like, it's out of context, doesn't matter what politicians, athletes, throughout history, just like, that's not what I said, and you effing know it. And I censored that.
You did. Know? I appreciate that.
I'm going to keep things effing PG from now on.
Hashtag top 10 Twitter.
What? Yep. How dare you put me in a box? You son of a bitch. Now I'm breaking the cursing rule.
All right. Here's what Todd said. What keeps things alive up to a point is the imperturbable attitude of the titular heroine, who is invested with Try and Stop Me Spirit by Moner, who's actually 18 and looks it despite preventative measures. The same goes for Wahlberg, who's 19, who is Wahlberg's nephew, I think, Mark Wahlberg's son. There's a palpable gap you can't help but notice between the essentially innocent, borderline pubescent nature of the leading characters and the film itself, and the more confident and mature vibes emanating from the leading actors. The director seems to be trying to keep the hormones at bay, but there are some things you just can't disguise. Perhaps human nature, first and foremost. Dora seems committed to projecting a pre-sexualized version of youth while throbbing unacknowledged beneath the surface is something a bit more real, its presence rigorously ignored. To be believed, this story should have been set in 1955.
Okay. It's a lot to take him in about a movie that I am not going to watch.
Yeah, well, the thing is, using the word throbbing, you get what you're trying to do here. Words are weapons. Mm-hmm. So, fascinating way to explore that.
Well, it doesn't make me want to see the movie anymore.
No, true, true.
So
there we go.
Well, perhaps that was his ultimate goal.
Yeah, to get people not to go.
Yeah.
By describing it that way. And the man's 69, too, so it's a little uncomfortable on a number of levels. Anyway, we're turning that into a positive by doing the top 10 treasure hunt movies. We'd kicked around. What was the other one we kicked around? Jungle Adventure.
Yeah, well, we'll save that for another day.
Oh, yeah, right. We're not saying what they were. We're just saying
Well, you did just say what it was.
Well, I mean, what our choices were.
True.
We're just saying it's a possible topic down the road.
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But this one, this is what we settled on.
Yes.
It seemed like fun. It's something different, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't, you know, I can't believe we haven't done this topic. It's like, wow, it hasn't come up really all that often.
Yeah.
It's an interesting one because right before we started, for the first time in a long time, I had to rework my list in front of you. I don't normally.
Yeah.
For the past, it's been a while since I've had to do that because I come in and just like I've already done, you know, that aspect of it. And today it was just, it's how on some level you want to kind of extend the definition, so to speak.
Okay.
Because there's two I put on my list, I think, were just like, yes, but it's this is also part of the scope of what it is.
Well, I think treasure is subjective. And so treasure can be anything.
Yeah.
Right? I tried to make it the point of the movies, but didn't always succeed with the choices. So that's what I'll say.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I'll say.
All right.
Like there's a treasure hunt aspect to the movie doesn't necessarily mean it's the main reason for the movie, but most of the times it is in the choices I made in my 10. So that's what I'll say. That's a very roundabout way of saying that.
Yeah, there's one I had to cut. It's unfortunate, but just like, you know, that's what I was doing. It's like, all right, if I'm going to allow this one, then I have to allow this other one.
Right.
Because I was disqualifying it, you know, for varying reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, well, what is treasure?
What? It's a very good philosophical question.
It is.
What kind of treasure?
Well, what are we actually treasuring within the context of this movie?
Yeah.
Is it just the straight lust for the object itself, or is it what the object can accomplish?
Sure.
Who's helping you get that object, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, there's tons of choices.
There are.
Oh, see, I mean, if we were going like top 15, I could give you a straight face top 15.
I stopped at twelve because I had to. If I'm only choosing one of a series, then that which was my rule for my list.
Okay.
Then yeah, to me, 12, 13 is about as far as I can get. If I'm including more from, then yes, 15 to 20 is definitely in play. That's what I would say.
Yeah, and there's going to be something in the end that I think benefits you.
Oh.
And you're going to relish every second of it, and I know it, but I am fine with that. I constructed my list honestly.
Okay, fair enough.
Knowing that I would lose a certain discussion later on.
Wow.
Yes.
You might be surprised. We'll see. We'll see how this goes.
I will not be.
Okay, all right.
I can guarantee.
All right. You want to touch on anything? You want to talk about anything? You're good to go.
For those listening, Thursday or Friday this week, later on the week on Patreon, we'll be putting up, we've got video of last week's show.
Yeah.
And it's for Patreon members. If you're at $20 and above, you can go there and check it out.
Yeah.
And we hope you enjoy that. We're, John presented us with this potential opportunity.
Just happened to fall into our laps and thought we could use it.
Yeah. And then you said maybe we could do this more often for our patrons. So it's a way to give back. So thank you for thinking of.
Of course.
You know, seeing this found gold for what it was.
This treasure?
Yes. Some people would just potentially cast it aside and be like, that's a one-off, and be like, it doesn't have to be.
Right. And the Matt makes a good reference. That's the thing we're dropping for our $20 above patrons. It's, like he said, it's last week's show, which is with Ryan Satin, top 10 movies featuring a pro wrestler. And trust me, if we're going to be on video, you get to watch our pretty faces and bodies reacting to each other's lists. Ryan Satin, who is one of the most, how could I say this? A person with a lot of moves and gestures,
okay.
Is a perfect choice to be this video that we put up. So we're trying to see if we can do this once a month for our patrons, mm-hmm. $20 and above. So if you're not $20 and above, you get there. If you can get there, you'll get access to this kind of stuff.
Yeah, and you're part of the re-list at that point.
Yes,
you also get the classic episodes and Topic Thunders, and you get a shout-out at the end of the month. Like, we're giving back more and more and more. We have more ideas for Patreon.
Absolutely.
But yeah, we just got it all done. We're going to put it out for you guys so you can enjoy it. Yeah. And our thanks to you. Figure out different ways to give back to our patrons.
We said we were going to come up with new content, even if we stumble upon it.
Yeah.
It is still new content.
And we will for y'all. Admittedly try and be better about the release schedule next time.
That's true. Very true.
You know, hey, let's enjoy. Let's, you know, it's a nice toy. Let's enjoy the toy. Let's not just cast it aside because you know a shinier toy is coming down the pipeline.
Agree 1,000%. Yeah.
So I think that's it. You want to jump in?
Yeah, let's do it. Matt, how's the show work?
Once we set a topic, John and I go our personal ways and create individual top 10 lists. Show back up here. I do my bottom three. He does his bottom three. I do my next two. He does his next two. Then we trade one apiece. Once we have revealed our personal top 10 lists, we create the shows between the two of us.
Boom.
So,
love it. All right.
10 for me is Treasure Planet.
Great choice, man. I had to cut it. I didn't want to cut it.
It was a 10-11.
Yeah.
I cut 11 for it. I was like, you know what? I know I've seen this more than I've seen 11. I don't know how often I'm going back for 11. Maybe.
Yeah.
But
that's fair.
10, it's just like, this will pop up in my life every once again. I enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
It's one that dumbfounds us both that it didn't do better.
Yeah.
It's super interesting, engaging, the mix of like CGI and I think still some hand-drawn elements.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm not 100% sure, but I think so. But it's a nice marriage between the two. Yes. I know all the when the ship is out in outer space and whatnot, that's all CGI.
Right.
But I think a lot of the characters may or may not be up close, still hand-drawn.
I think they are hand-drawn. I remember seeing a behind-the-scenes about it, so yeah.
And it's, you know, it's a great retelling of a story that'll get retold over and over and over again.
Yeah, yeah.
And when it succeeds, it's really good in, as it is in this instance. I think it's the best cinematic version of that story.
Yeah.
Agreed. That I've seen at least. There's been others.
Yeah. I would thoroughly agree with you. The other ones that do the faithful adaptation of Robert Louis Stevenson's book is fine. But this is the one that I come back to enjoy the story again if I want to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also one that I think if there's enough of a groundswell, once they're done redoing all these like more famous and more successful animated films, a live version of Treasure Planet or a live action version of Treasure Planet would be so much fun. And I know there is this groundswell this underground groundswell of Disney fans who want to see this. And Titan A.E. as well. And
that's got no shot.
Atlantis, The Lost Empire. That one's another one people like.
Atlantis has a better shot than Titan A.E.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's a standalone. Atlantis fits in nicely with their princess motif because they built it in. But it goes well with the world, as does. I mean, Treasure Planet, you have to fold in a little bit.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't follow the same Disney formula over and over. But it'll still get remade.
Yeah.
Maybe not by Disney because they don't own the property.
Right.
I'm sure it's public domain at this point or something, or maybe he's got an estate.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's such an interesting fascination within pop culture for a long time, like Swiss Family Robinson and just this being marooned on an island. Maybe it's after whatever, all the stories of 150 years of massive naval powers.
Yeah.
And they just all this fiction came up and it percolated. And then now we have a few of the gems that just stay with us for years on end.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. What's your number nine?
Nine is Three Kings.
That's my nine. Yeah, good stuff.
It's actually where I learned tensillary strength.
Ooh.
It's Ice Cube's character works as a baggage handler at an airport.
Uh-huh.
And when they're going to put the gold bars into the bags, he's like, you can't do that because it doesn't have the tensillary strength. And then I think it's Clooney turns around and is like, what? And he's like, he worked as a baggage thrower. He knows bags. It's going to rip right through it type of thing. And I was like, oh, that makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah, of course.
In the midst of this, you know, basically they're trying to steal Saddam's gold.
Yep.
It's the same as stealing Nazi gold. It's the same as stealing any gold from a tyrant,
right,
so to speak. So this one's going to happen again at some point. It'll probably just be a government doing it as opposed to individuals.
Be, I guess.
Not
should it in that should. It should happen. More like that's the way usually it'll go.
Yeah. There is no moralistic right.
True.
I think in that moment.
Because I agree.
Think of all the death that got to that.
Yeah.
To that specific moment. Who's right? Really?
Yeah.
Really? It's kind of a.
On both sides.
Exactly. But Three Kings, so, you know. It ends up being a moralistic tale of what is your actual motivation? What should you treasure?
Yeah.
Type of thing.
Yeah.
And is it just this hunk of metal or saving these people and doing what you're supposed to be doing and safeguarding them?
Right.
It's what you signed up for and that's what you're here for, technically.
It's a surprisingly dark film that people don't bring up enough when they talk about the best war films because it shines a light, a harsh light on what we were doing there and some of what we would come to know later in Guantanamo and mm-hmm. all that kind of, like, you, the fact that soldiers get put into these positions and get very disillusioned about what they're doing and then how they act on that disillusionment. Certainly Clooney's one of those guys who's just waiting to get the hell out, and he yeah. hates what's going on. And then there's that torture scene that's really brutal. And
it is with Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah. And you're just like, getting holy shot. Shit. Yeah.
It's, yeah, that's, it is brutal.
And the pouring, I think the pouring the oil or whatever, like, it's
down
just
his throat.
Nuts. Yeah. All that stuff. You're just like, wow. And this is Spike Jonze.
Doing some good acting.
Hell yeah. And Nora Dunn. As yeah, well as the reporter. Right. She's great in that.
Well, I mean, I think what most people know for it now is O. Russell just going bananas and Clooney decking him on set.
Yeah, right. Going at it. Yeah.
If they know that. I don't know how many people actually go back and rewatch this one.
Right. And that's David O. Russell, O with a period, not with a apostrophe. Just want to make sure that's clear for Chance in case that idiot's listening. All right. Well,
what are you taking him on or something?
No. When Dan and I took him and Kalinowski on, we went to Sudden Death. And the question was, who directed Three Kings? And Dan didn't have it, but he was the first to answer
yeah.
and said David O. Russell. Chance wrote David O. Russell like he was fucking Irish with an apostrophe.
That's utterly different.
There we go.
That is utterly different.
Matt, you have
misspelled his name. That is not his fucking name.
Thank you. And Kalinowski got it right, and I got it right. But I challenged them taking the point away from Dan, or not giving the point to Dan and giving the point to Chance, because I said, David O. Russell is a different fucking heritage. And the way he wrote, if he had just put David O. Russell, not even with apostrophe, then I could give it to you.
Yeah.
But David O. with an apostrophe, Russell, that's fucking Irish.
It is Irish.
Yeah.
You have changed his nationality, right. everything about him, by not understanding.
Yeah.
If you could do it. I bet you, it's not as dramatic as that. Like, you could misspell Spielberg and then might shift them to a different region, but it's not the same thing.
No.
It's so clearly as an O is signified by, this comes from a very specific section of the world
yeah.
in Western understanding.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It is. So you utterly changed the complexity of who that individual was. You're wrong.
Yeah, I thought they were wrong. Exactly, yeah. I argued that Dan should get the point because he was the first to answer. He's not going to cheat off everybody else if he's the first to answer. So he didn't get it written down on the whiteboard quick enough. So they said on a technicality, because he didn't write it down on the whiteboard, he doesn't get the point. But this motherfucker could go and put O. Russell with apostrophe, and because he wrote it on the whiteboard with an apostrophe, then he's okay. It's okay because it's close enough is what they said. Ellis, of all people, of course. Ellis always judges against me on these fucking things. And then Levine backed him up. So
I mean, that. I understand you know that his name is David O. Russell. Like,
right.
You've read it, but it's so distinctly a period after it that it takes it to waspy upper crust.
Yeah.
A certain level of douchiness that you're David O. Russell. We've all agreed to it.
That's
fair. We call you that in public.
Yeah.
And that's fine. You've earned that right.
Yeah.
But it's not O. Russell. So where is he from? And, you know.
Right. Right. Right.
What does he sound like? I assume he's a fucking caricature of it. Oh, highly holy.
Right.
You know, I make movies. And you're like, do you now, David?
And if I had been quick enough and smart enough, sitting super pissed, I'd have looked it up on IMDb. There is a David O. Russell with the apostrophe. So you can't say, you can't misspell a person's name if there's another person in IMDb that has the same spelling of their name. So if I had reacted quickly enough, I would have looked it up and then used it as an argument. So, but it was ridiculous. Anyway, so let's move on. What's your number eight?
My number eight is Black Sea.
Oh, yeah. Good choice, man. Couldn't put it on.
Okay.
Good choice, though, dude. It's right there in my honorable mentions.
I've already rewatched it a couple times.
Yeah.
It's there after Nazi Gold.
Yeah.
And it's out in international waters. Mm-hmm. And supposedly, you know, this one company found it, but they can't go after it. So they're going to subsidize you guys to get it. And you get a portion of the cash
yeah.
thereafter. And then we take the lion's share because we're putting up all the money.
Yeah.
So you want to go get some Nazi Gold? I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm in. We're going to be on a submarine. Okay. Yeah. I'm in.
Yeah.
You know, it's all these weird veterans from Eastern European countries having to live together. And you can tell that there's some acrimony, especially from Ben Mendelsohn,
mm-hmm.
just playing a dick once again.
Yeah, yeah.
It's one of the few times where he's so good, you hate him. Just like, shut up, dude.
Yeah.
Shut up. You're the only one agitating anyone in this world.
Yep.
And it's so frustrating to watch, but it should be.
Yeah.
You know, on some level, that gold is cursed. And I don't believe in curses, but
yeah,
ill-gotten gains type of thing.
And it's great submarine work, the camera work, the tension, mm-hmm. the frustration, the anger, the issues with language that are happening down there, people speaking different languages, that kind of stuff that adds to the element of frustration. All of it is fin. And then what happens at the end, you're just like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
So it's like, this was a very, very well done
movie. Not getting to the end, you
yep.
know what I mean?
Yep, yep.
See it?
Yeah.
It's basically like once it ends, you're like, well, of course it went that way.
Yeah.
But there were so many different possibilities.
Yeah. Damn it. I probably should have put it on my list, man, but...
Just, that one's just a pure treasure hunt.
Yeah.
They're just straight going after treasure. That's why I made my list. It was like, that's an easy steak and potatoes answer for me.
That's a fair point. All right. My number 10 then is The Mummy.
Okay.
Yeah.
On my side list.
Yeah. Enjoyable film. I see it more than Black Sea, which is why I made it to my number 10 and above Treasure Planet, because I don't see it at Treasure Planet as much as I see The Mummy. Mummy's a fun, fun time. And you know, you get great stuff from John Hannah and Brendan Fraser and Rachel Weisz and everything goes on. They're going for the treasure, and Arnold Vosloo, who plays Imhotep, I think, and everything that goes on with that. It's such a fun film. Stephen Sommers directing it. And whenever it's on, I'll stop and watch like half an hour or whatever, because it's that old school 50s adventure vibe to it. You know what I'm saying? And whereas Raiders is more of an elevated approach to that. The Mummy is very much in the vibe of the 50s adventure stuff and cheesiness
it is.
Of it all.
It's
yeah.
When, you know, when Rachel Weisz's character, like, basically practically turns to camera and breaks the fourth wall, but not quite, and is like, take that, was it Pembroke Scholars?
Yeah.
And you're like, okay. But it fits the overall context of the movie.
Yeah, right.
It's kind of like a harder edge throwback.
Yes.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Just with the way that Imhotep, when he comes back, is taking the life and essence from these individuals to build himself back up. It's pretty gory.
Yeah, agreed.
And it's interesting, the scarabs taking over the greedy guy as people get picked off. And the best part is that hairpiece on Fraser looks real. It looks real as shit. That looks like his hair. It's a great piece.
No comment. I don't know.
Hasn't he been open about that?
I think he's been open later in the later years. I think it happened in the later years. I think he's still, don't you think he's still someone in his prime in 99, maybe?
I think he was using a piece probably in 99. His hair was thinning out.
Maybe you're right. Maybe
I mean, Nick
right.
Cage was using a piece longer. Once I looked back at it, I was like, wow, he started early. There's nothing wrong with it. Look, you know, you make money with how you present yourself, and that drastically alters how the public perceives you.
Yeah, it's true.
If you start having a horseshoe, you know, and you're just bald on top.
Yeah.
You know, go ahead.
It was weird seeing Dan without his cap on the other day. We were at a screening. He took his hat off. Dan's completely bald up top. He looks like a completely different person, Dan Murrow, with the hat.
He always has a hat on.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, versus the hat. I'd never seen him without the hat.
Okay.
So I was like, oh, shit, this is a new, okay. I hadn't seen that before.
Is this his thing now? Is he going hatless?
No. He just happened to take it off while we were all there for the Hobbs and Shaw, I think, movie.
Or
one of them. Which movie? Whatever. We were at some screening.
How was it?
Hobbs and Shaw?
Yeah.
A fucking blast.
Okay.
It's what it's supposed to be, right? You turn your brain off. You see a bunch of action stuff. It's the charm of The Rock and Jason Statham.
Of course. It's the only thing to draw you
exactly. And Vanessa Kirby is great as well. She's fantastic in the movie.
But... Yeah. It's so over the top in the trailers.
It is.
That I know they held back a little bit.
Yeah, there's a lot that you don't see in the trailers. The movie is basically nonstop action. There's maybe 5 minutes of downtime, tops. 5 minutes. Everything else is just like from thing to thing to thing.
Maybe I'll see it.
There's a couple of cameos though that pop up that you didn't know are in the movie.
How much does it tie back to that world?
Zero.
Good.
It's only mildly referenced, I think, once. And that's
it. Rock doesn't turn to Statham at some point and be like, it's all about family?
No. Well, not the way Dom does it.
Okay.
Because you see in the trailer, he goes
does
back
Jason
to Samoa.
Does Jason Statham live a quarter mile at a time? Because
no,
that's what I need to know.
Jason does not. No. No. They're both in their element in this movie, that's for sure. And they have great chemistry.
Good. Happy for
him. Yeah.
I hope it's a big hit.
I imagine it will be. As I said, number 9 was Three Kings for me as well. Number 8 is It's a Mad, 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 Mad World.
Yeah, not on my list.
Yeah, I didn't think it would make it. I know it's not one of your favorites.
Not one of my favorites.
I thoroughly love this movie from top to bottom. Incredibly funny. Something I watched all the time growing up with my dad or my mom. All those great old school comics are in there. The great cameos are so funny. All of it just works for me. And Spencer Tracy being that hangdog guy, put upon guy who's got a nagging wife, a nagging daughter, and he just it wants to find a way to escape all of it. And this is an incredibly long comedy, Matt. This is
It's like 2.5 hours.
Yeah, 2.5 hours. Very rare in comedies to have something this long, right?
We have so many different characters.
You really do.
And they do take their time with all of them as they're trying to, you know, basically race from one place to another.
Yeah, to find this gold under the W.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It really should work. I just know.
I don't understand why it doesn't work for you, man.
I don't fucking like it at all. Yeah. From the first viewing, I was just like, no. Everything, it just drove me. I didn't see it either until I was an adult.
Oh, okay.
Like, well, you know, maybe in the past 10 years or something.
Okay. That's fair.
And I was just like, no. Yeah. I don't like anything about it. It's the, I think it's Ethel Merman.
Yeah, Ethel Merman. Very funny.
She's wearing these bracelets and she's always waving her arms around. So she's just clanking and making so much god awful noise in every scene she's in.
Well, she's supposed to be irritating.
She is supposed to be irritating. Yeah. It was too much. And that's the one that stuck with me. And I was like, I'm out.
Well, if you haven't seen it, Jimmy Durante is at the beginning of the movie and it's his money that they're going to go get. Sid Caesar's in this thing as part of Mickey Rooney, Buddy Hackett.
It's a who's who.
Yeah, it really is. So many people are involved in this. As he said, Ethel Merman, Rochester, Peter Falk, all these people that are great comedians. And then you get the little cameos from the Three Stooges and a bunch of other people. Milton Berle.
Of course.
Phil Silvers, Don Knotts has a cameo. Mm-hmm. There's some Dick Shawn's in this thing. There's so many great, great actors in this thing. That's very funny. Connie Stevens, what have you. So if you haven't seen it, I'd say go see it. And it's incredibly funny, or it's on Criterion as well. So you can buy it that way if you want. All right.
Yeah. You're not alone. You're the majority opinion.
Yeah.
I don't know how much I'm in the minority. I would assume a lot. Like I'm in a 20th percentile, 15th percentile. Like it's probably a fairly well-beloved
mid to
upper 80s type on Rotten Tomatoes, maybe a little higher type of thing.
Probably, yeah. What's your number 7?
Oh, shit. Does that mean an angel got its wings? Oh, yeah. Did you hear that?
I heard a bell ring.
I did hear a bell. That's the first time I've ever heard a bell here like that.
I'm starting to salivate. What
old
the
school
fuck?
Chimes. Just hear those sleigh bells jingling, jing, jing. It wasn't that quite that much.
No. Christmas in July or August by the time you hear this episode. All right, yeah.
So that was your 8?
That was my 8. What's your number 7?
7 is Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Ooh, that is a punt.
Okay.
Yep.
6 is where, so this is where I had the full-on discussion with myself.
Okay.
As to whether or not I'm counting it.
Okay.
But I ultimately chose it, which is Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl.
That is my number 6. Okay. So let's have that conversation.
All right, technically, the treasure they're lusting after is one gold coin.
Yes, it is. But it's a gold coin that means so much.
It does. And and ultimately the treasure is they just want to be immortal again as opposed to immortal.
Right.
And kind of Jack Sparrow's along for the ride.
Yeah. Having a blast.
Having a blast. And Will Turner, and I can't remember her name.
Swan.
Was it Swan?
Swan.
Swimmy, swammy, swammy.
Where's
Samsonite?
Samsonite.
I was way off. Shit. And then there was
Elizabeth Swan. Isn't Elizabeth Swan?
Is it Swan was the last name?
I thought it was. Hold on.
Because then her dad was like the Commodore, or was that the boyfriend?
No, the dad was Commodore.
Commodore, and then the boyfriend was like whatever.
One of those guys.
Soon to be Admiral.
Yeah.
But I can't remember.
It is Elizabeth Swan. Yeah.
Wow. Good for you. Nice pull.
Damn. Will Turner, Jeffrey Rush as Barbossa in
Barbossa.
This thing. Right?
Dar.
Jack, you'll be giving me the coin.
I just love that him and Depp both went to as high as they could go. And
it
works so beautifully. It's impressive. Just utterly impressive.
I think everybody gives Depp so much credit for what he did with Jack Sparrow, but Jeffrey Rush deserves a lot of credit. This is a man in his 50s doing this part, and it's incredible.
Fantastic.
Right?
Literally, he goes, "Yarr!"
and
it's great. It's the best of all time. The thing that is the cartoon caricature of the character.
He makes it work.
Yarr! I'd be like, dude, nobody kills it like Jeffrey Rush. No, it's give me somebody else. And then,
thing with the monkey is great.
Yeah, the thing with the monkey is great.
Yeah.
I just love that when he comes back to his mortality and he's been shot,
The
look of kind of sweet sorrow, the bittersweetness of this moment, this is all I've ever wanted. I can feel again. I have. My life is, you know, given to me and taken away instantly.
Right.
it's good acting in a throwaway movie because everything else Disney had done based on a ride.
Yeah.
What, Haunted Mansion, dog shit.
Oh, yeah. It was terrible, Haunted Mansion.
They came out with Tomorrowland after.
Yeah, that wasn't.
That was terrible.
Yeah, it wasn't that good.
It was just boring.
Yeah, yeah.
For something that has all these huge sci-fi possibilities and to put some of them in, but it was just dull.
And that's Brad Bird.
Brad Bird with George Clooney.
Yeah.
And Cranston. Is Cranston the heavy?
I don't know. I don't remember. I only saw it once.
Who's the heavy? Is it Paul Bettany? No, I want to say it's Cranston.
Maybe it is Cranston. I've only seen it once. I know.
I've only seen it once, too.
Britt Robertson is the girl.
Okay.
I know that much. Tim McGraw, Catherine.
Oh, no, it's, don't tell me. Hugh Laurie is the heavy.
Yes, he is.
Knicks. There you go. Boom.
Yeah. Yeah. Ooh, that might come up in the Schmodown. That's good to know.
Yeah, that one might actually. When you say that, sometimes I'm like, I don't know. That seems pretty obscure. Yeah. That one come up.
Oh, you know what I'm watching? Speaking of Hugh Laurie, we're watching The Night Manager right now.
You know what? I liked it until the very end.
Oh, shit. Don't ruin it. Okay.
I'm not going to ruin it.
We are having.
I'm alone.
Okay. We're having a fucking blast.
It's so good.
Yeah. We just finished the third episode, and we're like, this is excellent. And I'm trying to finish everything tonight, so I can rush home and try to at least watch two episodes before we have to go to bed, and then watch the last episode tomorrow. But like, we just stumbled upon it. She asked me. She goes, I put it on my list. I found it the other day. I was going to watch it without you. Do you want to watch it? And we just started. I was like, yeah, let's give it an episode and see if I'm in. And fuck, man, I was hooked.
Yeah.
Hooked.
Hiddleston and Hugh Laurie and so
Elizabeth Debicki, who's the blonde.
Skarsgård.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
That's the best I could do. That's an unfortunate, I would suck in the Schmodown because it's.
Oh, no, no, no. You're talking about the guy who's his right hand man.
Yeah, that yeah, suspects.
That's Tom Hollander, I think his name is.
Is it? I thought it was one of the. I conflate those individuals because it's the same guy that was in like K-19 the Widowmaker, and he was in Green Lantern as the
that's Sarsgaard. Yeah. But the guy who's his second in command is Tom Hollander. That's his name.
What's Hollander?
The Corcoran guy. He was in, remember About Time? Did you ever see About Time?
Yeah.
He's the writer guy who's always bitter and frustrated about everything.
Vaguely. Does he look like the guy that I'm thinking of?
He does look like him, yes.
All right.
Like the guy you're thinking of? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is him.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So he does look like Sarsgaard.
He was on Taboo, that Tom Hardy show.
Yes, he was. Yeah, he was in Taboo.
He was in Pirates of the Caribbean.
He was.
Is the head of the East India Trading Company.
Yep, good call.
Let's see. What
Rogue
else?
Nation as well. He was a prime minister in Rogue Nation.
Okay. Well, that's. Enjoyed. I'm sure then like he was in The Loop.
Probably.
That British political comedy.
He was. Damn. Good stuff. Simon Foster.
Yeah. I know the guy.
Yeah, you do.
I just mixed him over with.
Yeah. Which is easy to do. They kind of look similar.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. Kind of British and American version of themselves.
Yeah. But once you're like, no, they're totally different actors.
Yeah.
But in my head, they're just a little. Sorry, fellas. You're both excellent, by the way. You're both excellent. I just rattled off. I went deep cuts on your tracks.
You did.
I know your work.
You did.
You're an excellent actor. I just, unfortunately, my brain is. I'm getting old.
He popped up in this. I watched Baptiste, which I think I mentioned. It's the third season of that show that was The Missing on Stars.
Yeah.
So he's like one of the main guys in that third season. He's not even here in the States yet. I kind of you know, did my thing and enjoyed it. So if you've watched it, and you're British or
you got
whatever,
a screener copy because you're in the critic community.
Yes, I did.
And sometimes you benefit from those things.
Very well said. Thank
yeah, you, cover my you know it happens.
Totally does.
As much as film Twitter sucks, it's got its benefits.
TV Twitter really helps.
You're all part of the sphere.
Oh, you think the whole thing. Fair enough.
As these production companies, they're doing TV shows and movies and whatnot. I showed up here a couple of weeks ago, and some company just sent a boatload of Star Wars T-shirts.
Oh, yeah. That's
and
right.
And you offhandedly, you're like, hey, take one.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, really?
Yeah,
and I went through and I think the best designs in my size had already been picked over.
Yes,
and that's fine. But I got a nice shirt out of it.
Oh, that's
I'm happy
good.
For it.
That's good.
I'll wear it. Basically, it's nice and thin, so I'll wear it while I'm doing work around the house.
Yeah.
It'll come in handy.
That's good. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, good film. And it, you know, the sequels weren't as good as it went along, but that one is still fantastic.
I still haven't seen. I watched the first 10 minutes of.
Oh, Tell No Tales? Dead Men Tell No Tales?
Yeah.
Yeah.
With Javier?
Yeah.
Or Javier?
Jacques Sparrow.
Yeah, I wanted to, and I was watching, I think, on a flight.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I'm going to move on to something else because this isn't doing it after 10 or 15 minutes.
Yeah, was it the whole, like,
I don't know.
Escaping out of the...
I am just kind of tired of... I still believe it could be good again.
Yeah.
But I don't know. This just seemed like a retread.
I think it, the most ironic thing in the world is Depp's career, man. I mean, at the beginning, so many people were like, you guys need to see this guy. He's so fucking good. He's just doing independent films. He doesn't want to be part of the studio system. And then he gets this chance to be a part of it at a later age in life when he does Pirates of the Caribbean. And he starts to get this, like, all these other roles. And then all this shit happens later on in his life, the stuff with Amber Heard and whatever side you're on that. Mm. And it just seems to have affected him. And now people, like, don't want to see him and shit. Like, people are so mad at him in Fantastic Beasts and other things. And this is still a damn good actor. Certainly in Black Mass, he's fantastic.
I don't blame him for Fantastic Beasts.
A lot of people do. A lot of people think he was, like, the cooler of that movie. The movie's not good, but...
No. So, blaming him for... It's not his fault. The first one wasn't good.
Right, right.
And Colin Farrell was excellent. And it felt weird. It felt weird then when you took him away and gave us Depp.
Yeah.
And somehow this reveal was like, Colin Farrell was great. I love Colin Farrell. It's nothing against Depp. We both love Depp, too.
Exactly, exactly.
It just seemed like a weird, like, ha-ha! And you're like, it's not really...
You didn't step up on this one.
Well, had you gone from some...
kind of equal.
Something that's the polar opposite of Johnny Depp?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But when it's like, hey, another version of the same color, you're like, okay. You know?
A new hue!
Exactly. It's right. Fine. This is extra cobalt blue. You're like, okay. All right.
I was good with the cobalt blue.
Yeah.
Really.
It was fine. It was fine.
You didn't have to. But
you didn't have to.
But all right.
But they came out with that new black filament or whatever it is, and you can shine a light on it, and you can't see the light anymore until you move it off to something else because it just absorbs so much of the light that has no reflectivity, really.
Huh?
So it just looks like the empty vacuum of space.
Right.
And you're like, yeah, but still black, you know?
Yeah.
Still, even that, the amazing depths to which you got to that color, still the same fucking color. Or absence of all color, if you want to get technical.
That's true. Fair point. all right, so then we jump back to me, yes? Because that was Pirates of the Caribbean number 6?
So we go to my 5.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry.
Because that was your 6. Well, no, your 7. What's your 7?
That's what I was going to say. My 7 is Romancing the Stone.
You know what? No.
What?
Loved it as a kid.
Really?
Went back to rewatch it with Catherine like a year ago. Yeah. We both were like, it's not fun.
Oh, man. Okay.
I loved it. My mom owned both of them.
Yeah.
It was part
Jewel
of her
and
VHS.
Nile.
Yeah. Right, Jewel and Nile and Romancing the Stone, but she preferred Romancing. Right. So I've seen that a lot of times.
Yes, yes.
And I thought I loved it and then went back and was just like, it's just, no.
Okay. Wow.
When was the last time you saw it?
6-7 months ago on AMC. Just one Saturday afternoon, just laying on the couch.
Maybe it's something like that where there were no stakes. We were just like, hey, tonight, why don't we watch this?
Yeah, I was just laying on the couch. And I was like, oh, shit, I haven't seen this in forever. And I had a great time. I love their chemistry.
Okay.
The jokes are fun. Danny DeVito's hilarious. And I just enjoy, and the Joan Wilder thing is so fun. The Joan Wilder and the Sarah Connor thing in the 80s basically was a competition. Like that idea of people would imitate the Joan Wilder, people would imitate that and then imitate the Sarah Connor thing all the time. And so at least that's what I remember growing up. People would joke about it all the time.
Your worldview is everything you experience. So
right, right.
If it was all around you, then it was all around you.
Kind of was.
Yeah.
Yeah, so to me, it's still a fun film, and I enjoy what happens in the action adventure. I think it is Zemeckis who directed *Romancing the Stone*.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And so it's like the adventure of it all is so much fun, and it didn't lose its magic. I can totally understand going back and you don't feel the same way.
I was surprised myself.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I can understand her not enjoying it as much because she didn't really have any stakes vested in, or any investment in it. But having watched it, I don't know how many times.
Yeah.
Because it was one of her few. She rarely called her shot on a movie. She would just let us watch what we wanted to watch.
Right.
So it's just like, looks like we're watching Romancing the Stone. Okay. Here we go.
Here we go. Let's have fun. If you haven't seen it, let us know. If you go back and see it, see if it's any good. Tweet at us or let us know. It's always fun to hear what people think. What's your number 5?
5 is, so this is part of the combo of same with Pirates for me.
Okay.
Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou?
That's my 4.
Okay.
They literally say, do not seek the treasure in the movie. So there is
a treasure. But the treasure is a lie.
It is a lie, but it's still a treasure hunt movie because they're hunting a treasure.
And it's him, his ultimate treasure is getting his family back. So that is what
exactly.
is the motivation.
Right.
If I was going to allow pirates, then Oh Brother, just like, this is no, I already had Oh Brother on my list. And I was like, okay, well, I'm cheating here on some level.
No, no.
Well, he lies to Totoro and to three-part name. Hold on. Timothy Blake Nelson.
Yes, Tim Blake Nelson. Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. You guys are buddies?
No, it's Tim Blake Nelson.
Is it?
Yes.
I have respect
for
the man.
You do.
I know that he went in with SAG and tried to be Timothy, and there was already a Timothy Blake Nelson
there
taken.
Was.
So
there
just
was.
So he's like, I'll shorten it down. But it's going to break my mother's heart.
So, I respect the shortening of the name when you have three names. I respect that.
Sure.
Right?
As opposed to
I'm not John.
Michael J. Fox adding a J because...
Right. Or David O. Russell.
David O. Russell. You mean the Scottish or Irish?
Irish
individual
director.
Irish? Great director. Danny Boyle's AD for like the longest time.
He really was.
And then finally got his shot.
He did. He got his
shot. So good. So good. It's not. And I don't care if Levine backed them up. They're wrong.
I agree 1,000%.
It's a completely different.
Yeah, Levine, of all people who got away with the Heady Headley situation when in our match, was going to be the one saying, oh, no, the David O. Russell, it's close enough.
But what if the guy's name was like Alphonse de Leon, right?
Yeah.
But instead of the day or whatever, they actually spelled out D-A-Y because they just thought it was middle name was Daniel Day-Lewis. And it's day. And you're like, that's not his fucking name.
It's
a part of the cultural, the societal.
Yeah.
This is a choice they all made where we add this too. I know in the Middle East, they do it as well. It's like Al.
Yeah.
You know.
Al Aminu. Like the Farouk Al Aminu.
Alasana. Just shit like that. You're like, it's part of.
Yeah.
So if you take it away, it's changing the identity of what it is.
Brother, you know I agree with you.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it was a bullshit decision. So
Ellis Levine and who's the other genius on this triumvirate?
I think Christian was part of it. But
I'm not surprised
by that. Ceded that to Ellis because he was part of that whole double spin bullshit with Snyder when we faced him in the top 10. Remember that?
Of course I remember that.
Yeah, that bullshit.
It was give Snyder whatever he demands today.
Yeah.
Didn't realize that we signed up for that.
Right. I had no idea. I didn't buy tickets to that show.
No. No one bought tickets to that show except for Snyder and Snyder's family. Yeah, and JTE's.
And JTE. So what were we?
Oh, Brother.
Oh, Brother, yeah. It's
my 5-year-4.
So much fun. George Clooney, as he said, John Turturro, Tim Blake Nelson. Such an unusual Coen Brothers film, and yet... Perfect. It's note perfect.
It's
right.
It just further cements the fact that Coens can do whatever the hell they want.
Yep. And they make every environment they step into come to life with nuance and the little things. You know, the casting, the look of the sets, the little like the Dapper Dan hair stuff. All of it puts
this place a geographical oddity. Just 2 weeks from everywhere.
2 weeks from everywhere.
I'm a Dapper Dan man. I might watch that tonight. I haven't seen that in a couple of years. Such a good movie.
Even what's his face from that law show who played Babyface Nelson, right? Him just like,
oh yeah,
he's great.
Oh, Stephen Root.
Yes,
that's a mighty fine singing and a dancing. A blind guy that runs a record, printing company.
Yeah,
I guess
he's so good.
He's just one after another. It's the best representation I've ever seen of sirens.
Oh, yeah.
The siren song. Like,
absolutely.
Yes. If sailors believe that this was a potential in Greek times, mm-hmm. that's where the fable comes from.
Yep.
This is the Odyssey.
Yeah.
It's like, I could see why that would be inviting. You're just kind of wandering through in this weird, and they're offering comfort and a feeling of security and warmth, and it's all false, and it'll just lead you to your death.
Yeah, and I grew up in the South, so a lot of what I'm watching on the film, like, you just feel an inherent attraction to, or it just affects you because you're like, oh, yeah, I know these places. Mm-hmm. I know places that look like this and people that act like this in those places, and it's fascinating. You drive through Virginia or any of the states.
Talk to a guy that lives in West Virginia.
Exactly. Go to the smaller towns. There's people just like this who are good, wholesome people, just got a weird approach to the world, and ain't nothing wrong with that. It's their approach.
Who knows now in the age of the internet what it's like? I'm sure it's a lot of the same, but at the same time, they have access to more information.
Fair point, yeah.
Because I think that's probably the biggest difference. They're just such smaller, more tight-knit communities.
Mm-hmm.
That, all right, well, if you don't hear different world views, you're only going to believe
one thing.
Cumulative experience that the X number of individuals around you are, living the same time.
Yeah, true.
It's a lot of that movies.
Holly Hunter's great. Good. John Goodman is funny for his parts, and the dude chasing him down, that Seinfeld guy that chases him down.
Oh, you mean Satan?
Yeah, Satan, exactly.
Coming after him, there's...
with the black...
over and over, John sunglasses. Goodman is the Cyclops.
Yep.
He is awesome. He's a Bible salesman, but he's the Cyclops.
He is the Cyclops. Big John Tuco. Yeah, all of it, just so much fun. And then when you find out what happens at the end, that it's all been a lot, you're just like, oh my God, they should kill this guy, you know? All right, so that's...
just over and over and over. There's so many good lines from it. Are you in an OFT?
Yeah.
Kid just barreling through.
I like the dude who plays the opponent to Charles Durning. That guy, the character actor.
Oh.
That guy is great.
When they, basically expose him for being part of the KKK.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm part of a certain organization. Although, if you're going up against, Huey Newton, guy that's offering the socialist dream, which is what he was doing.
Yes, he was.
It's kind of, he exposed, he's giving too much of what the people want to hear at that moment.
Exactly. Is you is or is you ain't my constituency.
Yeah.
And then they literally run him out on a rail, which I've never seen before on film. That was brilliant.
Yeah, me either.
That was so much
fun.
And
a super catchy tune.
Yes, it was.
From what, T-Bone Pickens?
Yeah, yeah. Or T-Bone Burnett.
T-Bone Burnett.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
That I'm a man of constant sorrow. They're all just dancing up there. I loved it. It shouldn't work.
Yeah, the beard thing is hilarious.
They always had this weird choreographed. They've never worked on it, but it's not just crazy intricate.
Yeah.
It's right on the line of,
Yeah. And then they throw in the Robert Johnson story, selling his soul to the devil to be able to play. It was great. What a random thing to throw in there as a storyline. So that film does not get enough credit from Coen brother fans.
I think overall most people just kind of skipped over it. It wasn't for them. The Odyssey, I don't know. Like when you read it in school, did it capture your imagination? Because it didn't for me.
It didn't until I saw the Armand Asante TV series.
How many times do you think that sentence has been said?
Maybe once.
Maybe once.
By Armand himself while he's drunk.
Yeah.
I didn't understand the Odyssey until I did it.
I got a soft spot for him, too.
Yeah, I love him.
One of the best names in Hollywood history.
Yep.
Just perfect. Great alliteration, Armand Asante. I love it.
3 or 4 years ago, I shot a movie, and we did a fight scene. Him and Armand Asante. Yeah, he knocked me out in a fight scene, which was great. It was so much fun. Fucking guy can, he's strong. Put his hand around my neck. No stage combat there. It was great.
Good for him. He's been around.
Yes, he has been around. So if you haven't seen No Brother, go check it out. What are we up to? Your three?
My four.
Oh, your four. What's your four?
The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Punt.
Okay.
Yeah. What's your number three?
I have a reason for it at four.
Okay, that's fair.
Three is not on your list.
Okay.
The Goonies.
Yeah. It's not on my list.
It's never going to make your list.
Never going to make any list of mine. Unless you're talking worst movies of the 80s.
It just baffles me, man.
Go ahead, man.
That just baffles me.
It baffles me as much as It's a Mad World baffles me that you don't like that movie. It's the same kind of, to me, that movie is so fucking good that I do not understand somebody doesn't like it. That's what makes our...
But
shows
this one is
great.
Closer to your generation, and it's so pervasively resonant with every person you know.
I know it is.
How many Goonies fans do you know of the hashtag not film Twitter?
Quite a lot.
That agree with you in your dispassion?
No.
Or your?
Oh, no. I'm in the minority of all my friends about the Goonies. There's a couple of them who agree with me, but for the most part, they all love the Goonies.
It just works on every level. It's a road picture. It's kind of a buddy film. It's coming of age.
Yeah.
It's the treasure hunt aspect and adventure. It rides the line of just being adult enough to where, there are guns involved and whatnot. It's not a murder spree, but there's genuine terror, and you bring something like Sloth in, and this Italian organized crime family in the Pacific Northwest. I mean, I love everything about that because that happens, They called him the Mickey Mouse Mafia in L.A.
Yeah.
And somehow the Pacific Northwest, though, the Fratelli's got a stranglehold on a certain aspect of the crime around these parts.
Well, that's my point. The movie is stupid. It's just so infinitely stupid and not in a way
they're going after
appealing.
Pirate treasure.
Yeah, but that's the thing. But all of it is just so ridiculous.
Of course it is. There's literal booby traps that have been up for 150 years, like these massive boulders suspended by chain. Okay. the oxidization alone, there's no way all these chains are still holding.
Of course,
and the booby trap system works. Right. I don't care because the suspension of disbelief is I'm going on a journey with a bunch of kids who are trying to hunt down pirate gold to save their families' homes, so they don't have to sell the goondocks, and they can stay.
Yeah,
you know, it is everything you love about the small, like the underdog standing up to rich jerks coming in and just putting their foot down.
Look, I know the movie should totally work for me. I've watched it 3 or 4 times now, and yet every time I watch it, I just do not like
it. You wanted more Martha Plimpton? Is that what it was?
No.
More Plimpton.
I really didn't want anybody, honestly.
More Brolin. Can't get enough Feldman.
Al Broman, yeah. Sean Astin as
Sean
well.
It's got a great cast.
It does have an absolutely great cast. I don't disagree with that. Robert Davi playing one of the Fratellis. John, whatever his name is.
Pantaleone.
Oh, yeah, Joey Pants.
Joey Pants is the other brother, and then the mom is she was in Throw Mama from the Train. Yeah. She, you know, had a hell of a career.
Isn't Matuzak the Sloth?
He's Sloth.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I couldn't tell you, you know, the
Ramsey. Right?
The one kid was also in Temple of Doom, but I can't tell you his
Short
name.
Oh, Short Round. Yeah,
I couldn't tell you his, you know, his name. With it's Data in this.
He is Data.
But I couldn't tell you the actor's name for the life of me.
They just always seem to, like, nothing. Every situation they get into, they find a way out. They find some convenient thing that works out for them.
But they all have skills. They all have certain skills that actually come up throughout the movie. One girl knows piano. She took some lessons.
She does.
She knows enough. It's not like the pirates are fucking Beethoven. They're not going to. They composed a few simple chords that she had to play.
Right.
That's it.
Right.
So this wasn't over the complex.
No.
Data made some booby traps of his own.
He did.
Because that's what he liked making things.
Yeah. Jonathan K. Kwan was his name.
Data. Jonathan K. I know the gentleman that played Chunk is now, I want to say he's an entertainment lawyer.
Yeah, he is. He is. Bald entertainment lawyer. Yes. Jeff Cohen. No, I'm not. I know. Sometimes I just say things I don't think that they're mean, and they make them out mean. Kurt Hansen is in the movie. He plays Mr. Perfect. Or Mr. Perkins, rather. Curtis Hanson, the guy who directed L.A. Confidential. The late, great
Curtis. Oh, wow.
I think. Or is that a different guy? Oh, no. I'm sorry. Yeah, he's just an actor. Sorry. There is a Didn't Curtis Hanson direct the...
I couldn't tell you.
Okay. I thought he did L.A. Confidential. Maybe I'm wrong.
What do you got? Old IMDb says?
Yeah, Curtis Hanson, director of L.A. Confidential.
There you go.
So that's why Kurt Hanson is Kurt Hanson.
There you go. And Timothy Blake Nelson wanted to be Timothy, but he had to go with Tim.
Wheels within wheels, man.
Timbo.
Timurino.
Sucks, buddy. Just down at the SAG office. Sorry.
Timitam, can't do it.
Can't do it, my man. Can't do it. Want to. Listen.
Really want to.
You seem like a great kid. We're rooting for you here at the SAG office. By the way, have you paid your dues?
Can't give you those extra letters without those dues.
No, Timmy. And yes, health insurance is going to go up this year. But guys, we're working on so much stuff. Have you seen the newsletter? Workshop for this random skill that I didn't realize people workshop for? And
yeah, it's all over the place.
Yeah. Don't do anything with this D&D production company. Okay, I don't know who that is.
Yeah.
I don't know which one.
All right, so that's number 3. Anything else you want to say about
Rightly
the
so, at 3, go ahead.
Richard Donner, is that who has directed that
one? Yes, it was.
Okay, all right.
Spielberg produced, I believe.
Yes. My number 5 is The Treasure of the Sierra Madre.
Okay.
Yeah, not on your list.
Not on my list.
Wow, okay. Absolutely love this movie.
I think I've seen it.
Oh, okay.
That's where I'm at.
Fair point. I've seen it a few times. There's like 3 or 4 Bogart films that I go back to all the time and watch. Certainly Maltese Falcon, Key Largo, this film, and African Queen, right? Those are all really good ones that I come back to and watch all the time. And certainly this with John Huston directing, Walter Huston playing that crazy prospector, everything he's into. I think this is the character they use for Looney Tunes when they have that Kim walk in whenever. But remember that Looney Tune when the Bugs Bunny is taking that penguin back to the North Pole, and Humphrey Bogart keeps walking in.
Oh,
brother, can you spare a dime?
Yeah,
he's like, no, get out of here. But yeah, That the film is so crazy because Humphrey's so desperate and this whole situation is insane as this goes on trying to find this treasure. The crazier and crazier gets him and his buddy trying to, like, you know, get this money because they'd be set up for the rest of their lives, and it's their desperation that keeps them overcoming all the crazy shit they get into and be willing to deal with it. Mm-hmm. You know, the badges, we don't need no stinking badges. That comes from Treasure Sierra Madre. So all of it, just incredible film and one of the great classics. And I just love watching it whenever it's on. Because you can just really sit back and just enjoy this fucking crazy movie. All right, my number three then is The Punt. Oh, because my number four is Oh Brother. My number three is The Punt from earlier, Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's number three.
I love this movie, man.
Okay.
Top to bottom. The rewatchability of this movie since I was 15 years old is off the charts.
Okay. It exists on the same level on some level to me as Life of Brian. I think I like them both.
Ooh, okay.
Well, Life of Brian, because the balls.
Absolutely.
The balls.
Absolutely.
To do a Jesus satire pick.
In the 70s.
Right. I appreciate it for that alone. Yeah. No way that picture gets made today. Unless it's entirely independently financed and they do it on a shoestring budget.
Yeah, good point.
But it took George Harrison coming in for Monty Python, for Holy Grail, to get finished.
Yeah, true.
I think that's partially why the ending is so just kind of abrupt.
Yeah.
Is they were searching for funding and whatnot.
They ran out of money.
They did. I've read there's all kinds of great trivia about it over the years. Like John Cleese, when he's the basically the wizard type of thing that's barring them from crossing.
Yeah, with the rabbit.
Yeah, he agreed to do it, but didn't realize he had to be up there all day. And he was kind of precarious. There was like apparently a heavy wind, and it was a cliff. And he could have fallen off, and he's just like, I had to keep crouching down to kind of conserve energy.
Holy fuck.
Because we were just up here for so long that day. You're like, all these stupid things they have to do because it's just a small budget.
Yeah, yeah. It also would fray them at the edges as a group doing those movies. Because, like,
Of course.
Yeah, I mean, you'd be out on those locations with no real, like, production coordinator, and they're all doing it, but
It benefited them, like, the coconuts in Holy Grail.
Oh, God.
That was a production choice.
Yeah, because they have no horses. Couldn't afford horses.
So they went back to the radio age. Okay, well, how do they make horse sounds? And they just gave them coconuts. It's way funnier.
It's way funnier.
For no reason whatsoever. They're just doing this. They never break the illusion. It's great.
Yeah.
They all get into this jaunt, like they're on somewhat of a horse.
I love the score, too. All of it's just so ridiculous. The notes that they're hitting, all the different characters they play, and the vignettes from Terry Gilliam, the animated vignettes or the images that move around that they use, all of that, and the conversations they have with God is like, that's such a good idea. Of course it's a good idea. I'm God. All of that is just incredibly funny, and the Camelot weird musical sequence in the middle of
out of nowhere.
Genius. It's just genius, man.
The anemic son that just fires that arrow. There's such a weird scene build up to that. Of course, the knights that say knee and the Black Knight.
Oh, the Black Knight, of course.
Yeah, just a flesh wound that's been in our lives now since it came out.
Yeah, true.
I grew up with it my entire life before I even saw the movie.
I knew about it.
Yeah. That and the knights say knee.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just impressive. I mean, they put out quality work for so long.
Yeah. This is still my favorite. I mean, the whole scene with the constitutional peasant is absolutely genius. Yeah, no, I mean, having a discussion about governments and representative government as a person stacking shit onto a pile in the middle of a field with a king, just the genius of a scene like that is incredible, man.
I mean, we brought it up other times, like that discussion between, in essence, what is the PLO and whatever the competing faction
in Life of Brian. Yeah.
And it's kind of, you understand the perspectives of both. It's done for lighthearted nature.
True.
It's still a very dark subject.
We're the People's Liberation Front.
Yeah, totally different.
We're the Liberation Front of the people. It's different. yeah.
It's an excellent movie.
Yeah, agreed. What's your number two?
Two is Raiders.
Okay, that's my number one.
That's where I told you I will lose this.
Oh, interesting.
I knew going into it I would lose discussion with you, and that is fine.
Okay.
That is fine.
Go ahead.
Because more than likely, you know, who knows? The 51% could agree with you.
Maybe.
It's
been known to happen.
Indy's in the discussion of my all-time favorite character in all of movie history.
Yep.
I think it's fantastic. If you gave me the choice of Indy or Han Solo, I choose Indy.
Yep.
Because that's someone I could be. As Han Solo is like, I don't know if that world, I guess it's hypothetically possible.
Right.
I don't know. So as a kid, I just was always fascinated by that. Plus, I loved like paleontology, and that's not too far from archaeology as a kid, like every kid did. But for like 5-6 years, I read every book I could get on dinosaurs. I had matching sheets and curtains in my room of dinosaurs.
Wow.
All my gifts were dinosaurs. I loved that shit. So being an archaeologist, if only you could have been a paleontologist, would have been even more of a sweet spot for me as a kid.
Yeah.
But since then, and I mean, Raiders is World War II. You're fighting the Nazis. It's the best villain in, you know, top five in movie history. Who doesn't hate a Nazi?
Right. Belloc. And Marion Ravenwood, you know, she's so good. Was it Karen? Karen Allen or Nancy Allen? Karen Allen, right? Yeah. She's so good in that. And the film is a great adventure, Matt. Like, just from beginning to end, even when there's an occasional downtime of scenes, it's still, you can still feel the pulse of the movie the whole time.
Yeah.
That's great.
It is. And you throw in the religious aspect of it as well.
Right.
You're going after the Ark of the Covenant.
Yeah.
Just what great stakes. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic. If you're going to, you know, of course you got to stop the Nazis from getting the Ark of the Covenant.
Right, right.
If that was even a thing. I love it anytime they do that, like Rasputin and Hellboy
coming
back.
Yeah.
And it's just evil, malevolent force. Like, yeah, you got to kill that guy, whatever it is, but you can't let the Nazis get fucking Ark of the Covenant.
Yeah.
And for that to be the stakes of the movies, it fits it to a T.
Mm-hmm.
All the subtle little things like the staff and having that, and it burns into the map that somebody had taken the time to make this like miniature map for this convoluted treasure hunt to find the Ark of the Covenant.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. They just did a great job. How much of the story was Lucas's before Spielberg got his hands on it?
I think it was all Lucas's.
Was it?
To start off. I mean, they worked on it together because they'd had the idea. I think Lucas pitched the idea to Spielberg or vice versa. And then from there, it just went. So I think they were intimately involved making the thing from the beginning. I don't know if Lucas wrote the script first. My inclination is that he did. And then Spielberg came in and like did some.
I know Spielberg directed.
Yeah, yeah. Did some changes and
but
stuff.
But I just didn't. Did he come in? And like it's 95%, and Spielberg's just like, okay, we'll shift this to here because it helps with this sequence, and whatnot.
I bet Steve would know. We did a Raiders of the Lost Ark was our first Cinephiles, so maybe.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah. So maybe Steve said that on the podcast. I don't know, but yeah. Now this thing also, like, it still holds up. It's 2019. That film is like 1981, and it still holds the fuck up.
It's timeless.
Yeah. Right?
And which is so really good. Impressive.
Yeah. Harrison is great. And once he's in every, he's like prescient. His performance is prescient because he is this kind of everyman hero in this action adventure, this new action adventure genre that was starting to become big money in the box office, right? Spielberg and Lucas.
Yeah, it didn't exist on this level.
Not on this level. Exactly. Right? You had action adventure movies in the past,
I mean,
but not to this level.
On some level, God, I keep saying level all day today.
Gym level.
Yeah. it's kind of like taking a television character and spinning off to movies, which hadn't really existed. Somebody you live with and you go on different adventures with over and over and over and watch them succeed.
Right.
Which you did on TV, especially everybody that grew up on that went and saw this.
Mm-hmm.
Just like the serialized, you have one hero.
Yeah.
Whatever the case is, they stroll into town, they handle business, and they stroll right out.
Yeah.
So to see franchises pop up and him be on the front wave of two of the biggest.
Yeah.
One is the biggest, and then the second one is like it's other independent. Like, you struck gold so hard, it's not even funny.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that he's divorced himself from Han so thoroughly. Well, I understand it.
Yeah. He hit a wall with it that he was like, I don't want to be known for this. Like, and poor... I want to say this correctly. You don't want to say poor Mark Hamill, but Mark Hamill was typecast for many,
it killed
many
him
years.
For like 2 decades.
Yep.
Until he got into voiceover animation.
You're right, exactly. Until he got into Joker, it kind of people were typecasting him all the time. And he speaks about it openly. Same thing with Leonard Nimoy and Spock. Like, he got typecast forever.
Yeah.
And Nimoy was an incredible fucking actor. And he was typecast as Spock and couldn't break out of it for the longest time. So he went back to theater. You know, Hamill was very lucky and found himself with the voiceover stuff, and you know, the rest is history. And now back in the Star Wars thing, 30 years later, just like Shatner. Shatner hated being part of Star Trek for a long time after it was over, because once again, he was typecast.
Yeah,
it was a fun show to do, sci-fi show. This was a serious actor. He'd been in Twilight Zone, Judgment, Nuremberg, and to be in known for this, he was just like, you know what I'm saying? So,
but it gave him a long and fruitful career.
Fuck yeah, it did.
Practically every other actor that ever attempted it would be envious of.
Exactly.
I think that's why he came back to it. Might as well embrace it at this point, because what does it hurt?
Mm-hmm. True. Right. And no one else was hiring him for anything else.
Yeah.
You know, T.J. Hooker wasn't. They weren't making movies out of T.J. Hooker.
He tried. Yeah. No, they weren't.
Yeah.
And it was whenever he popped up into culture, it was more ironic.
Yeah.
Like his music, that spoken word stuff.
Although the film, the CD he released a few, like 10, 15 years ago, has been, this is a fucking great CD. But that CD, I'm telling
really?
You.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Joe Jackson produced the CD. Henry Rollins is on the CD on one of the tracks. Like, it's really an interesting.
It's a weird hodgepodge.
It's a very honest CD. Like, every song is about his life and different musical styles, like a Western's kind of vibe, and then he remakes a song, a British song, about wanting to be poor, people, rich people wanting to be poor, to kind of common people. That's it. He remakes Common People, which was this British punk song. He remakes it with Joe Jackson, and it is great. Great. So I don't know what happened, because that 70s thing is ridiculous.
Of course it is.
Yeah. His Hamlet and all of that is insanely ridiculous. But
he's going for like beatnik cool.
Yeah.
That shit died 15 years before you're trying it.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's, nobody's buying that suddenly you're going to bring this back.
Yeah.
It's like Brian Setzer could only do so much for his genre of music, and that's he lived it.
Yeah, true.
Certain things you only bring back. It blows me away, though, that ska came back.
Yeah, right?
I was never a fan when it happened.
Ryan is a massive fan of ska. Ryan Satin, crazy fan of ska.
I kind of associate it with wrestlers.
Yeah.
My head.
Certainly one of the
wrestlers. Well, the last time it came around, it was like the same people that watched wrestling also listened to ska. So good maybe point. But I heard one song on the radio and I was like, oh my God, that's the Mighty Boss Tones just transplanted 20 years. Are you fucking kidding me? This came back? Yeah, exactly. Out of nowhere. It's something about like a flames, propane, gas, something along those lines. But it's just quite perfectly.
All right.
I'll look it up. Yeah,
Ryan and I, when we were doing one of the pro wrestling sheet recaps for Raw or SmackDown, he went off for like 5 minutes about the ska music and how he doesn't understand why people don't like ska, and he gets
shit. She's Kerosene.
Oh, she's Kerosene?
Yeah.
I've never even heard of this.
You have. I heard it on the radio or something.
Okay. That's fucking ska.
It's ska. It's with polka music influence. It's fucking ska. It was unique in that there was also like a resurgence of big band swing when this came out.
Yeah.
Remember those Gap commercials?
Oh, hell yeah.
Everybody going, and then all of a sudden those dance classes sprung up wherever you lived, and people were
swingers,
swing dancing. And
yeah,
all that shit.
It was
part of a movement out of nowhere, just ska. Wow, really?
Yeah.
There's just a huge resurgence for fucking ska in this day and age?
People want to be happy, man. It's a depressing time in the world.
Yeah, but at the same time, the fashion trends seem to be all 90s.
That's true. Well, yeah, what's old is new again, always.
Yeah, but that was a depressing pop culture time, like with Nirvana at its height.
Good point.
So you can't sell me on like a...
Yeah.
Ska was a reaction to a decade of that. Ska was like, I'm sick of being melancholy, happy.
Right.
Get out of here with your fucking polka music. No.
One of the wrestlers uses ska. Let me see if I can pull this up real quick.
That's not really ska.
It's kind of ska.
It's got no horns. Ska. What is that here? Kind of, yeah. It's like a ska hybrid.
Yeah. because those are the
little
horns.
Harder rock, light metalish type of feel to it. Yeah. You got to have horns.
You got to have horns. It's not ska without horns.
And usually on like an eighth or a 16th beat, they're like bah, 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 whatever. If you're on 4/4 time,
yeah,
they're playing much faster than you.
All right, that was your number two.
That was my two.
So then my two. Right, we go to my two, yeah. Which is The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, which is the pun from earlier.
Okay,
absolutely love that movie. The 3-hour Western, for the love of God. The 3-hour Western. It's pretty incredible. It's an epic, epic film. Great performances from Clint Eastwood, obviously, Eli Wallach and Lee Van Cleef. And the story itself is a journey. And all these adventures that they go on. You could almost separate the movie into 3 or 4 different movies. Like, you know, within themselves. Like the whole Civil War sequence could be its own movie.
Sure.
The whole thing at the beginning with him saving him constantly from getting hung all the time could be a separate movie. When he goes to visit his brother, all those things just all connect in certain ways that work so well. So that by the end, you've gone on this journey where you've kind of switched allegiances and you have more of a depth to all these people.
Well, you really only vacillated between two of the three.
Yeah, true, right. Yeah, evil is evil.
Evil is always evil.
The bad, rather, is bad. Yeah.
The good is not good.
Not fully good.
And the ugly is truer to who we all are.
Right. Great point.
So it's why you kind of go back and forth. Yeah. You want to believe the best in yourself, but then you see Clint Eastwood and be like, yeah, but your altruism seems kind of flawed.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality of the ugly, it's like, yeah, I can identify, you know, a little bit more with this.
Yeah. And the bad is just the bad. I mean, like, that scene where he makes the guy playing the instrument play louder while he's interrogating and beating the shit out of the guy. You're like, oh, my God. And the dude's crying. You're like, this is insane. This everything they go through, getting involved in the Civil War, getting involved in all the things that they could, just to get to this money from, was it Bill?
Just a buried treasure in a fucking
cemetery.
It's
in a grave. The grave is Bill something. Bill something. I can't remember that.
Damn. But it's the perfect Mexican standoff.
It is, man.
It's just.
Woo.
I love. Did you ever see the Korean, The Good, the Bad, and the Weird?
No.
It's interesting.
Okay. Was it a takeoff on this?
Kind of.
Okay.
I think it's just The Good, the Bad, the Weird.
Okay.
Because they use. They try and bring in like historical elements of.
Oh.
Their region a little bit.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Okay.
If I didn't have Good the Bad, then that would be an interesting standalone.
Right.
But it's kind of like seeing Magnificent Seven after Seven Samurai. They're not equivalent to one another type of thing, but it's just like yours is an interpretation of one that I feel is superior, not to say yours is bad.
Right, exactly.
I like what I know, mm-hmm. what you loved as well.
Mm-hmm. Arch Stanton is the name on the grave.
Art Stanton.
I thought it was...
Perfect name.
I thought it was Bill something.
Art Stanton. Stanton's just good for you, Sergio. It's a good choice. It's awesome. It only ended up at number 4 on my list, I think, because I view the others more of a treasure hunt. Yes, they're going after this, but I think it's the interaction of the characters and whatnot that is truly the motivation of the movie.
I hear what you're saying. Right.
So it was just like, Goonies to me is... They're going after pirate treasure. Mm-hmm. Raiders is Ark of the Covenant.
Right.
It is a distinct. We have an end line here.
Okay.
So Good the Bad is like, it's the whatever it is, $20,000,
$30,000. Yeah.
Which, if you adjust it for inflation, I bet you that's
pretty good.
Let's say, I'll say $300,000. You can look it up. I can look it up.
$20,000.
What year would you say that movie is supposed to be set in?
63, 64, maybe 60. Even anytime in the 1860s. That's what you say. 1860, 1865, obviously, with the Civil War still raging. Bill Carson, that's the name I was thinking about for Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Bill Carson. Bill Carson. How many? So 20,000, is that what it is?
It's either 20 or 30,000, something along those lines. But if you put in,
I don't know how much it is.
I'll put in 20,000.
Okay.
It's calculated from 1862 to today, it's $500,000.
Wow.
Well, look, you take yourself off a gold standard, and then you take yourself off a silver standard, and you peg it to basically a concept.
Yeah.
Something we all agree has value.
Mm-hmm.
Devaluation and inflation are bound to happen.
I can't find how much it was. Oh, well. That's we don't have time to look for it.
Really? I thought it was, okay. It's not on like the straight Wikipedia page or anything?
Yeah, it went to the Wikipedia page. It doesn't say. And maybe I'm wrong. Was it Stevens offers $1,000, $2,000 to go? Sorry, all that you listen to this, but we're trying to figure this out. It doesn't say. Oh, shit. No. As Tuco prepares to shoot him, he sees a runaway carriage. Inside are several dead soldiers and a near-dead Bill Carson, who promises Tuco $200,000 in Confederate gold.
Holy shit. Oh, in Confederate gold? All right, we'll just calculate that and say it's the same.
Buried in a grave in Sad Hill Cemetery.
So you just assume, yeah, just amp it up. It's $5 mil.
Yeah, $5 mil. Sweet Mary, Mother of God.
Okay, well, that puts a different perspective on it.
It really does.
It does. $5 mil? $5 mil is good motivation.
Seems like a treasure hunt to me.
Yeah, it does. More so than
pirate treasures. Well, it's my opinion.
It depends on. Are you telling me that $5 million is more than the gold, rubies, diamonds, sapphires, everything else on the Goonies pirate ship?
That some 10-year-olds are telling me about? Yes.
Well, we have to see it. We're talking about the real world, so we know what that $5 million is in good to bad, and yeah. We know we have an idea of the sheer volume and tonnage of gold that they have.
Yeah.
Pretty sure that gold is worth way more.
Okay.
Way more.
Fair point.
That's all I'm going to say.
All right. So what is your number one?
My one is Last Crusade.
Oh, okay, so you put it in there. Yeah. I limited myself to one.
I know. When you said that earlier, I was like, I was going to do that, but...
Totally respect
it. When you're talking about this type of genre, for me, it's just like, well, these are the apex predators.
Yep.
Of this. You got to...
Can't deny that.
You want to tangle and be in this category, this is what you need to be doing on some level for me, personally.
Yep.
And Last Crusade is my favorite of the Indiana Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's, you know, it's pitch perfect. They're going after the Holy Grail. Once again, we got to keep this out of Nazi hands.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they get this, then they have basically an army that will never die, and they will rule. The Third Reich will take over us all. There's no stopping people that have immortality at their hands.
It's true.
So, awesome, fantastic stakes. And then to pull in, you know, the Knights Templar.
Yeah.
And the Crusades element of it. And it's already got great destinations within, you know, Venice. And they go to Jordan, I think it is. And that's where that valley, that Crescent Valley is.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where the exterior shot is. You know, what they did, the interior is just a set, but the exterior that's carved into the, you know, into the side of that valley, that interior valley, it's a real place. I've had friends that have gone there.
Yeah.
It doesn't go that deep as far as my understanding is. So it's just those exterior shots. But that alone is like, wow, what a beautiful, amazing thing. It's crazy that they built this all the way out in the middle of effing nowhere.
Yeah.
And it only goes so deep. Like, who is this for? What was this? Why did you spend so much? This is crazy. People have been around for a while.
Yeah.
But it ties in just so perfectly. Just like with Raiders. They have amazing set pieces that... don't detract from the story, only help basically fill out this world.
Yeah.
If we're going to have a guy that's going to be doing all these amazing things, well, let's put him in relatively amazing landscapes and settings and scenes and whatnot.
Yeah. I don't disagree. I mean, like I said, I limited myself, but I always go back and forth on which one I like the most. It depends on the day, Matt. Sometimes it depends on the week or the day. Like, what do I want to see today, Raiders or Crusade? And it honestly depends on the day, what mood I'm in, because they're both equally good.
They are.
And you can argue that Crusade kind of hits the same beats as Raiders, because Temple of Doom
wasn't
that well received. But
yeah, they went back to basics.
Right. But it has the element of Sean Connery. It has the element of him with the Hitler stuff and the Nazis, like the Templar, like you said. All of it's involved here. That's so much fun. It's the father-son thing that really gives the whole film a new feeling, and it's great.
I mean, you could sell me on the you prefer Raiders because there's more Indian Raiders.
Sure.
Because it is a back and forth with Connery. But I think Connery, the introduction of his father, elevates the overall character to me because it gives me, A, a greater understanding, but B, he doesn't have to have this gruff exterior the whole time. There's more vulnerability from him in this. Because his dad can just cut him, you know, cut through the clutter and be like, I changed your diaper.
Yeah, not just that.
Yeah, you can't big league me.
Yeah, and not just that. He doesn't have to physically go toe-to-toe with his dad. Like, his dad does not have to physically go toe-to-toe with Indiana. He knows.
It's an intellectual discussion.
Yes, it is. Exactly.
So you need to beat me with your wits.
Right.
If you really want to best a man. It's, he says, with to Marcus Brody, Marcus, the pin is mightier than the sword. And he gets all giddy when they're down in the bottom of that tank.
That's what I love. I love that a man who has played James Bond and is like known for action films and being this hardcore badass, he plays an intellectual, a nerdy intellectual, so damn well with great layers, right? Because when he has to be a dad to Indiana, he is a dad.
Oh, full of, yeah, right through, through.
And when he has to be like tender at the end and vulnerable and call him to make sure he doesn't reach for the grail, it's great.
That's when he goes from, I'm speaking to you like I'm your father, to I'm speaking to you like I'm your friend.
Yep.
And I am one in the same.
Yeah.
I want nothing more than for you to get everything in this world. Yeah. But right now you're making the fool's choice.
Yeah.
And just to cut through by saying Indiana.
Yeah.
It's amazing how effective something that simple is.
Yeah.
But they built it up. It's much better than just Martha out of nowhere. Yeah. He didn't give us Martha the whole time. Indiana's all he's been called by, and his father calls him Junior.
Exactly.
We established that this is part of their repartee, their back and forth.
Exactly.
So to see that pivot, it actually has resonance.
Agreed. Junior. Yeah, all right. Well, there's our individual lists for the top 10 treasure hunt movies. Let's put this thing together. Matt, do you want to write or do you want me to write?
It doesn't matter. We already know what number one is.
Right. True.
So Raiders.
Okay.
I would say probably then Good the Bad after that.
Okay.
Can I do Last Crusade? This is my number one next.
You know, it's, I don't know.
The False Piety. He's typing it down, folks. What's your next
We
highest?
Don't normally give the number one this way. We usually wait till four or five, but.
There's, okay, really? Cite an example.
Last week?
I don't remember what happened last week because there's three of us.
We pushed Ryan's number
That's because
one.
There's more than one opinion going on. We have to find, that's a different state. That's an anomaly within the context of what we've done all these years. Find me another example.
I could, but I don't think we have the time.
Or the memory.
Because Monty Python, right, because I'm old. Monty Python, the Holy Grail is my three and you're?
My seven.
Okay. And Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
5-4, wasn't it?
Yeah, that seems to go, Brother. Right? So, all right, so we'll put your crusade here. And then Oh Brother?
Correct, so that's what, 3-4?
I feel like we should put the Oh Brother, but all right, I'll let you get that one.
Feel how you feel.
Oh, I do.
Your feelings are valid.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I need.
Just incorrect.
Oh, see.
I'm not invalidating.
We're almost
I am
there.
Supporting you in your feelings.
I feel like you're bringing me close and then slapping me. All right, so Raiders.
Such
good.
Is life.
Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou? Do we put Monty Python now?
Probably.
Okay. And then we both have Pirates at 6.
Yeah.
So maybe Pirates next?
Yeah, and then I got my number 3.
Yeah, so do I. I do not. Okay. And then Three Kings is the other one we haven't come, but that's further down.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so your number 3 is what?
Goonies.
Fucking. Okay.
Dude, you got your number 1. Mine dropped to 3, and you got...
That's true.
The rest, that list looks more like your list than it does mine. Wow. It does.
That's because it's right. All right. I have my number.
Well, how many we got left?
We have 3 left.
Okay.
And I have my number 5, The Treasure of the Sierra Madre.
Okay. Well, we should probably do Three Kings next because we both have that.
Okay. That far down the list? Okay.
And then Sierra Madre after that. Mm-hmm. So that's your 5.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you got left?
I have number 7. What do you have left?
My number 8, Black Sea.
Okay, so my number 7, Romancing the Stone. All right.
Makes the list.
All right. Am I saying it wrong? Is it the Treasure of the Sierra Madre or the Treasure of Sierra Madre?
That's a good question.
Yeah, I want to say that right. I want to give it respect.
Of the sounds, but of Sierra Madre is quicker. I would say of the Sierra Madre.
The Treasure of the Sierra Madre. That's the name of it. Wow, that's a lot of thes.
Yep.
All right. The Treasure of the Sierra Madre it is. All right. Let's break this thing down. The top 10 treasure hunt movies. Yeah.
And number 10.
Romance in the Stone.
Coming in at number 9.
The Treasure of the Sierra Madre.
At number 8.
Three Kings.
In the 7th spot.
The Goonies.
At number 6.
Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl.
In the 5th.
Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
At number 4.
Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou?
Coming in our 3rd spot.
Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
In the 2-hole.
The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
And finally, our number 1 treasure hunt movie is...
Raiders of the Lost Ark. There it is. Is that Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade? That's the name of it, right?
Yes.
Okay, just want to make sure. It's not Raiders of the Lost Ark, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Just want to make sure.
Well, look it up.
I'm looking it up.
Yeah, go for it. I don't know.
It's been a long day, man. Yeah, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. All right.
Well, perfect. There we go.
There's our list. Treasure hunt movies. I can't imagine that we're asking people to go see Dora, so feel free if you want to go. Maybe it's something's throbbing.
Yeah, let us know if you know early critical reviews are incorrect.
And if anything is throbbing underneath as you watch it. Anything like that. Anything you want to say before we wrap up the show, brother?
No, just if you want to continue the discussion with us, you can do it over at facebook.com/groups/the top 10 show or join us over at patreon.com/the top 10 with the number 10. Both of those are with the number 10, by the way.
Yeah.
And we got all kinds of different stuff. Like we said earlier, there's the video of last week's show, and we got classics and topic thunders. We give you a shout out. There's the relist. Mm-hmm. And we're coming up with more and more things we're trying to give back since you guys gave us so much. And you can follow me online at Matt Nost, MattKnost.
Yeah, you can follow me at The Roka Says on Twitter and on Instagram. See everything I'm doing there. Thanks everybody for watching this week and or listening rather this week, and we will talk to you next time on the Top 10 Show.
Adios.